toll," said Gambling. "Dwarves are said to be cunning folk with stone. Lend us your aid, master."
"We don't shape stone with battle axes, nor with our fingernails," said Gimli, "but I'll help as I may."
They gathered such small boulders and broken stones as they could find to hand, and under Gimli's direction the Westfold men blocked up the inner end of the culvert until only a narrow outlet remained. Then the deeping stream, swollen by the rain, churned and fretted in its choked path, and spread slowly in cold pools from cliff to cliff.
"It will be drier above," said Gimli. "Come, Gambling, let's see how things go on the wall."
He climbed up and found Legolas beside Aragorn and Éomer. The elf was whetting his long knife. There was for a while a lull in the assault, since the attempt to break in through the culvert had been foiled.
21, said Gimli.
"Good," said Legolas, "but my count is now 24. It's been knife work up here."
Éomer and Aragorn leant wearily on their swords. Away on the left, the crash and clamour of the battle on the rock rose loud again, but the Hornburg still held fast, like an island in the sea. Its gates lay in ruin, but over the barricade of beams and stones within, no enemy as yet had passed. Aragorn looked at the pale stars and at the moon, now sloping behind the western hills that enclosed the valley.
"This is a night as long as years," he said. "How long will the day tarry?"
"Dawn is not far off," said Gambling,
who had now climbed up beside him.
"But dawn won't help us, I fear."
"Yet dawn is ever the hope of men," said Aragorn.
"But these creatures of Isengard, these half-orcs and goblin men that the foul craft of Saruman has bred, they'll not quail at the sun," said Gambling. "And neither will the wild men of the hills. Don't you hear their voices?"
"I hear them," said Éomer.
"But they're only the scream of birds and the bellowing of beasts to my ears."
"Yet there are many that cry in the Dunland tongue," said Gambling.
"I know that tongue. It's an ancient speech of men, and once was spoken in many western valleys of the Mark. Hark! They hate us, and they're glad, for our doom seems certain to them. The king, they cry. We'll take their king. Death to the Forgoil, death to the Strawheads, death to the robbers of the north. Such names they have for us. Not in half a thousand years have they forgotten their grievance that the lords of Gondor gave the mark to Eol the Young and made alliance with him. That old hatred Saruman is inflamed. They're fierce folk when aroused. They'll not give way now for dusk or dawn until Theron is taken, or they themselves are slain."
"Nonetheless, day will bring hope to me," said Aragorn. "Is it not said that no foe has ever taken the Hornburg, if men defended it?"
"So the minstrels say," said Éomer.
"Then let us defend it, and hope," said Aragorn.
Even as they spoke, there came a blare of trumpets. Then there was a crash and a flash of flame and smoke. The waters of the deeping stream poured out hissing and foaming. They were choked no longer. A gaping hole was blasted in the wall. A host of dark shapes poured in.
"Devilry of Saruman!" cried Aragorn. "They've crept in the culvert again while we talked, and they've lit the fire of Orthanc beneath our feet. Elendil! Elendil!" he shouted, as he leapt down into the breach.
But even as he did so, 100 ladders were raised against the battlements. Over the wall and under the wall the last assault came sweeping like a dark wave upon a hill of sand. The defence was swept away. Some of the riders were driven back, further and further into the deep, falling and fighting as they gave way, step by step, towards the caves. Others cut their way back towards the citadel. A broad stairway climbed from the deep up to the rock and the rear gate of the Hornburg. Near the bottom stood Aragorn. In his hand still, Andúril gleamed, and the terror of the sword for a while held back the enemy, as one by one all who could gain the stair passed up towards the gate. Behind on the upper steps knelt Legolas. His bow was bent, but one gleaned arrow was all that he had left, and he peered out now, ready to shoot the first orc that should dare to approach the stair.
"All who can have now got safe within, Aragorn," he called. "Come back!"
Aragorn turned and sped up the stair, but as he ran he stumbled in his weariness. At once his enemies leapt forward. Up came the orcs, yelling, with their long arms stretched out to seize him. The foremost fell with Legolas's last arrow in his throat, but the rest sprang over him. Then a great boulder, cast from the outer wall above, crashed down upon the stair and hurled them back into the deep. Aragorn gained the door, and swiftly it clanged to behind him.
"Things go ill, my friends," he said, wiping the sweat from his brow with his arm.
"Ill enough," said Legolas, "but not yet hopeless. While we have you with us, where's Gimli?"
"I don't know," said Aragorn. "I last saw him fighting on the ground behind the wall, but the enemy swept us apart."
"Alas, that's evil news," said Legolas.
"He's stout and strong," said Aragorn. "Let's hope that he'll escape back to the caves. There he'd be safe for a while, safer than we. Such a refuge would be to the liking of a dwarf."
"That must be my hope," said Legolas. "But I wish that he'd come this way. I desired to tell Master Gimli that my tale is now 39.
"If he wins back to the caves, he'll pass your count again," laughed Aragorn. "Never did I see an axe so wielded."
"I must go and seek some arrows," said Legolas. "Would that this night would end, and I could have better light for shooting."
Aragorn now passed into the citadel. There, to his dismay, he learned that Éomer hadn't reached the Hornburg.
"Nay, he didn't come to the rock," said one of the Westfold men.
"I last saw him gathering men about him and fighting in the mouth of the deep.
Gamling was with him, and the dwarf, but I couldn't come to them."
Aragorn strode on through the inner court and mounted to a high chamber in the tower. There stood the king, dark against a narrow window, looking out upon the vale.
"What is the news, Aragorn?" he said.
"The deeping wall is taken, lord, and all the defence swept away, but many have escaped hither to the rock."
"Is Éomer here?"
"No, lord, but many of your men retreated into the deep, and some say that Éomer was amongst them. In the narrows they may hold back the enemy and come within the caves. What hope they may have then, I don't know."
"More than we. Good provision, it said, and the air is wholesome there because of the outlets through fissures in the rock far above. None can force an entrance against determined men. They may hold out long."
"But the orcs have brought a devilry from Orthanc," said Aragorn. "They have a blasting fire, and with it they took the wall. If they can't come in the caves, they may seal up those that are inside. But now we must turn all our thoughts to our own defence."
"I fret in this prison," said Theoden. "If I could have set a spear in rest, riding before my men upon the field, maybe I could have felt again the joy of battle, and so ended. But I serve little purpose here."
"Here at least you're guarded in the strongest fastness of the mark," said Aragorn. "More hope we have to defend you in the Hornburg than in Edoras, or even at Dunharrow in the mountains."
"It's said that the Hornburg has never fallen to assault," said Théoden. "But now my heart is doubtful. The world changes, and all that once was strong now proves unsure. How shall any tower withstand such numbers and such reckless hate? Had I known that the strength of Isengard was grown so great, maybe I shouldn't so rashly have ridden forth to meet it, for all the arts of Gandalf. His counsel seems not now so good as it did under the morning sun."
"Don't judge the counsel of Gandalf until all is over, lord," said Aragorn.
"The end will not be long," said the king. "But I won't end here, taken like an old badger in a trap. Snowmane and Harsofell and the horses of my guard are in the inner court. When dawn comes, I'll bid my men sound helm's horn, and I'll ride forth. Will you ride with me, then, son of Arathorn? Maybe we shall cleave a road, or make such an end as will be worth a song, if any be left to sing of us hereafter."
"I'll ride with you," said Aragorn.
Taking his leave, he returned to the walls, and passed round all their circuit, enheartening the men, and lending aid wherever the assault was hot. Legolas went with him. Blasts of fire leapt up from below, shaking the stones. Grappling hooks were hurled, and ladders raised. Again and again the orcs gained the summit of the outer wall, and again the defenders cast them down. At last Aragorn stood above the great gates, heedless of the darts of the enemy. As he looked forth, he saw the eastern sky grow pale. Then he raised his empty hand, palm outward in token of parley.
The orcs yelled and jeered. "Come down! Come down!" they cried. "If you wish to speak to us, come down. Bring out your king. We're the fighting Uruk-hai. We'll fetch him from his hole if he doesn't come. Bring out your skulking king."
"The king stays or comes at his own will," said Aragorn.
"Then what are you doing here?"
they answered.
"Why do you look out? Do you wish to see the greatness of our army? We are the fighting Uruk-hai."
"I looked out to see the dawn," said Aragorn.
"What of the dawn?"
they jeered.
"We are the Uruk-hai. We don't stop the fight for night or day, for fair weather or for storm. We come to kill by sun or moon. What of the dawn?"
"None knows what the new day shall bring him," said Aragorn. "Get you gone, ere it turn to your evil."
"Get down or we'll shoot you from the wall," they cried. "This is no party. You've nothing to say."
"I have still this to say," answered Aragorn. "No enemy has yet taken the Hornburg. Depart, or not one of you will be spared. Not one will be left alive to take back tidings to the north. You don't know your peril." So great a power and royalty was revealed in Aragorn as he stood there alone above the ruined gates before the host of his enemies, that many of the wild men paused and looked back over their shoulders to the valley, and some looked up doubtfully at the sky. But the orcs laughed with loud voices, and a hail of darts and arrows whistled over the wall as Aragorn leaped down. There was a roar and a blast of fire. The archway of the gate above which he had stood a moment before crumbled and crashed in smoke and dust. The barricade was scattered as if by a thunderbolt. Aragorn ran to the king's tower. But even as the gate fell, and the orcs about it yelled, preparing to charge, a murmur arose behind them, like a wind in the distance, and it grew to a clamour of many voices crying strange news in the dawn. The orcs upon the rock, hearing the rumour of dismay, wavered and looked back, and then, sudden and terrible, from the tower above, the sound of the great horn of Helm rang out. All that heard that sound trembled. Many of the orcs cast themselves on their faces and covered their ears with their claws. Back from the deep the echoes came, blast upon blast, as if on every cliff and hill a mighty herald stood. But on the walls men looked up, listening with wonder, for the echoes didn't die. Ever the horn blasts wound on among the hills. Nearer now and louder they answered one to another, blowing fierce and free.
"Helm! Helm!" the rider shouted. "Helm is arisen and comes back to war. Helm for Theoden King!"
And with that shout the king came. His horse was white as snow. Golden was his shield, and his spear was long. At his right hand was Aragorn, Elendil's heir. Behind him rode the lords of the house of Eorl the Young. Light sprang in the sky. Night departed.
"Forth, Eorlingers!"
With a cry and a great noise they charged. Down from the gates they roared. Over the causeway they swept, and they drove through the hosts of Isengard as a wind among grass. Behind them from the deep came the stern cries of men issuing from the caves, driving forth the enemy. Out poured all the men that were left upon the rock, and ever the sound of blowing horns echoed in the hills. On they rode, the king and his companions. Captains and champions fell or fled before them. Neither orc nor man withstood them. Their backs were to the swords and spears of the riders, and their faces to the valley. They cried and wailed, for fear and great wonder had come upon them with the rising of the day. So King Theoden rode from Helm's Gate and clove his path to the great dyke. There the company halted. Light grew bright about them. Shafts of the sun flared above the eastern hills and glimmered on their spears. But they sat silent on their horses, and they gazed down upon the deeping coom. The land had changed. Where before the green dale had lain, its grassy slopes lapping the ever-mounting hills, there now a forest loomed.
Great trees, bare and silent, stood rank on rank, with tangled bough and hoary head. Their twisted roots were buried in the long green grass. Darkness was under them. Between the dyke and the eaves of the nameless wood only 2 open furlongs lay. There now cowered the proud hosts of Saruman, in terror of the king and in terror of the trees. They streamed down from Helm's Gate until all above the dyke was empty of them. Just below it they were packed like swarming flies. Vainly they crawled and clambered about the walls of the coombe, seeking to escape. Upon the east, too sheer and stony was the valley's side. Upon the left, from the west, their final doom approached. There, suddenly, upon a ridge appeared a rider, clad in white, shining in the rising sun. Over the low hills the horns were sounding. Behind him, hastening down the long slopes, were 1,000 men on foot. Their swords were in their hands. Amid them strode a man tall and strong. His shield was red. As he came to the valley's brink, he set to his lips a great black horn and blew a ringing blast.
"Erkenbrand!" the rider shouted. "Erkenbrand!"
"Behold the White Rider!" cried Aragorn. "Gandalf is come again!"
"Mithrandir! Mithrandir!" said Legolas. "This is wizardry indeed! Come! I would look on this forest ere the spell changes!"
The hosts of Isengard roared, swaying this way and that, turning from fear to fear. Again the horn sounded from the tower. Down through the breach of the dyke charged the king's company. Down from the hills leaped Erkenbrand, lord of Westfold. Down leaped Shadowfax, like a deer that runs sure-footed in the mountains. The White Rider was upon them, and the terror of his coming filled the enemy with madness. The wild men fell on their faces before him. The orcs reeled and screamed and cast aside both sword and spear. Like a black smoke driven by a mounting wind they fled. Wailing they passed under the waiting shadow of the trees, and from that shadow none ever came again. Chapter 8. The Road to Isengard. So it was that in the light of a fair morning King Theoden and Gandalf the White Rider met again upon the grass beside the deeping stream. There was also Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and Legolas the Elf, and Erkenbrand of Westfold, and the lords of the Golden House. About them were gathered the Rohirrim, the riders of the Mark. Wonder overcame their joy in victory, and their eyes were turned towards the wood. Suddenly there was a great shout, and down from the dyke came those who had been driven back into the deep. There came Gamling the Old, and Eomer son of Eomund, and beside them walked Gimli the Dwarf. He had no helm, and about his head was a linen band stained with blood, but his voice was loud and strong.
42, Master Legolas!" he cried. "Alas, my axe is notched. The 42nd had an iron collar on his neck. How is it with you?"
"You've passed my score by 1," answered Legolas, "but I don't grudge you the game. So glad am I to see you on your legs."
"Welcome, Eomer, sister son," said Theoden. "Now that I see you safe, I'm glad indeed."
"Hail, Lord of the Mark," said Eomer.
"The dark night has passed, and day has come again, but the day has brought strange tidings." He turned and gazed in wonder, first at the wood and then at Gandalf. "Once more you come in the hour of need, unlooked for," he said.
"Unlooked for?" said Gandalf. "I said that I'd return and meet you here." "But you didn't name the hour, nor foretell the manner of your coming. Strange help you bring. You are mighty in wizardry, Gandalf the White."
"That may be, but if so, I've not shown it yet. I've but given good counsel in peril, and made use of the speed of Shadowfax. Your own valour has done more, and the stout legs of the Westfold men marching through the night."
Then they all gazed at Gandalf with still greater wonder. Some glanced darkly at the wood, and passed their hands over their brows, as if they thought their eyes saw otherwise than his. Gandalf laughed long and merrily.
"The trees," he said. "Nay, I see the wood as plainly as do you. But that's no deed of mine. It's a thing beyond the counsel of the wise, better than my design, and better even than my hope the event has proved.
Then if not yours...